Good morning. Welcome to the FTS bet slip on Wednesday, the 15th of April. Just had another few minutes with the old mute button on spreadsheets. This flipping microphone, you told me, it's sold me. It's far too quick to flipping. The mute button's rubbish, son. It's too easy to press it. There's no, doesn't need a pronounced press. You just touch it and it mutes. I end up talking to myself. Deflect it to Spready, and that leads me nicely into my first segment. We've got Jeff coming on today, Betty Blogger, so we've got that interview coming up in a few minutes. Recorded it Tuesday, really enjoyed it, as I said yesterday, so I'll be handing over to that shortly. But talking about deflecting to spreadsheets there, I was drinking my tea this morning, obsessing once more and reading on the latest Trump nonsense. I was reading about the sort of declining relationship with him and the WHO. And one thing that is, and this is a fact with him, when you've, I mean, I read about him every single day, as I say, I've got some sort of sick obsession, I need to get out of it. But right through, even before the campaign, in the campaign before he got elected president, he has got a skill, and it is a good skill, that he can deflect to something else. So as soon as he's under any pressure, he just starts talking about something else, just to move the narrative away from the fact that he's a completely incompetent buffoon. So with this now, obviously he's being caught out all over the place, whatever you say, and I know there's people who are like, he is being caught out all over the place, and he just deflects it to something else. So at the minute, he's deflecting it to the WHO, who did make a gaffe with the China thing. I have to say, they said, I think, that it can't be, this virus can't go from human to human, and they certainly delayed information coming out. So they are not at fault with all this, the WHO, but he's deflecting to them, master of it, and his base slapping up. But it just got me thinking, I mean, this will come into British politics soon, this deflection, exactly. So it just got me thinking, what if he was in another career, something like that I relate to? What if Trump was a horse tipster? Don't ask me how my brain works, because I don't know myself, but I was sitting drinking my tea thinking, just imagine if he was tipping horses. Even Will's provided a service on FTS for God knows how many years now, but Will always likes to do write-ups. So he'll do a little write-up while he's picking a horse, and every day he does a write-up after the event, and they drive me bananas. I know there's people in May like them racing, but I've sort of said to him, just bin them, they drive me bananas. Because if you win, you sound like you're just self-praising. And when he loses, he'll quite often cite things like jockey error or the like, and I just cringe. I sort of think to myself, just take it on the chin, because it always looks like you're trying to blame somebody else and make excuses. But imagine if Trump was tipping horses, and he comes on and his chosen nap of the day finished tailed off. Just imagine it. I mean, I can't do the accent. I wish I could, but I can't. But it would be like, it was the perfect tip. It was a great tip. I sat the trainer instantly. He was a bad man. Bad man. He was terrible. Terrible at his job. It was the perfect tip. The jockey had to go. He got the fractions all wrong. You know what? I know fractions. No one knows fractions better than me. In fact, my uncle, he went to MIT. Did I tell you I had an uncle at MIT? He used to say, Donnie, you are amazing at the fractions. All the jockeys ask me now, how are you so good at fractions, Donnie? Perhaps I have a gift. I don't know. So the jockey, he had to go. Terrible, terrible job. Bad man, terrible man. It was a perfect tip. It was the best tip. That's what he would be like, wouldn't it? Just be on and on. It was the best tip. The best tip. Yeah, I don't know where that came from this morning, but that was just, I was just thinking to myself, absolute nonsense, isn't it? Tom Moore, 99-year-old, doing 100 laps of his garden, flipping unbelievable, raised over $4 million. That does restore your faith in humanity. What an amazing for him, and amazing for people to respond to it like they have. I think he was only trying to raise £1,000, wasn't he? That's a true hero. That is an unbelievable effort. And the people donating, I've chipped a few quid in. Just unbelievable that, as I say, restores my faith in humanity. Right, I'm going to do the recipe and everything at the end of this. So I will now add in Jeff's interview, so you can listen to that. So this is about 40 minutes with Jeff yesterday. As I say, really interesting. Mentioned some services, people have helped him, but his overall approach as well and how he got into it. So I hope you enjoy that. So I'll pass over to that interview now.
Jeff with us. Jeff is known on Twitter as Betty Blogger. I've only known Jeff just over a year. Met him through Twitter, came to a trading seminar, but has got a history in the betting industry. So let's have a chat to Jeff. Morning, Jeff.
Morning, morning, Ian. How are you?
Yeah, fine, thank you, mate. You all good?
I'm not bad. I'm not bad. Before we start, can I just say condolences to Cassini. Some people will know him. Sadly, his mother passed away. So I think he's one of the good guys. So our thoughts go out to him.
Yeah, I saw that myself. I was awake about 3 in the morning and saw that on Twitter. Yes, yeah, condolences, Cassini. Green all over. It is a good old blog over the years. Yeah, no, it is sad, very sad. Horrible times at the minute. How are you coping with the kids with the lockdown?
I've got 3 kids, 6-year-old and 4-year-old twins. So as you can imagine, it's a bit lively. It's a bit like being a WWF ref at the moment. They're always about 3 seconds away from having another tear up. The positive, you have to take the positive out of things. And will you ever get this time, that much concerted time with your kids again in your life? Unlikely. So I keep having to tell myself it's a positive.
Right. Look, I want to get into your betting career. Obviously, you've had the website on the blog, which I'll get to in a minute, but you told me in a little few notes that your previous career you sold fruit machines and latterly FOBTs, which have been the scourge of betting shops and very high in the media over the last few years, and you put outrage always interests you.
Well, it was just I first got into it, and we were selling fruit machines into pubs, and I kind of had a lengthy career doing that. And our company were the company who sold power, so the majority of the market. And there was a lot of noise about it. When you always hear about them, people, the outrage saying, well, they're fixed. Well, the clue's in the name. They're fixed odds betting terminals. If you put £100 in, you get £97 out or whatever it was, and that is the fact of the matter. And I think the issue became where people didn't understand that. And you have people, gambling addictions are like any other addictions. It's hard to get rid of, and people just think they'd go. It's very easy to chase in that medium, and so they used to get. They were called the crack cocaine of gambling by an eminent professor in at Knox University, who used to do gambling stuff. So it was an interesting time, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I used to go in betting shops, I mean, years ago, but when they sort of, I'd probably go back 10, 15 years, and they'd sort of grown up by then, they did just look horrendous. People just used to stand there all day, and I never really got it. Again, it's a bit of self-responsibility, but the betting shops did tend to encourage them, didn't they?
Yeah, of course they did. I know people in the betting industry. The shop managers were asked to look out for their heavy players on it, and keep them occupied and make sure their favorite machine was available, and bring them coffee and stuff like that. What I felt sorry for the ladies and or men working in the betting shops, because they were told, the bookies used to spin a line about saying, responsible gambling, and we'll walk over and tell them, are you sure you've played enough? But at 9 o'clock on a Thursday night, when Edna's behind the counter and there's one bloke who's doing his brains on the machine, she's not going to walk over and say, don't put another 50 quid in when he's just lost £500, because she's likely to get a barrel load of abuse. And it's easy for the PR machines and the bookies used to say that, but the reality was different for these single-manned betting shops, who were the woman's just sat in there earning a minimum wage, thinking, hurry up and do all your money so I can lock the shop up type thing,
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. I think the staff who copped the stick were, they're not the ones responsible for it, and it wasn't their job. I totally agree with you. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, batter the staff up to let us put horse bets on. We'd tip them well. We'd go and buy them a coffee, go and buy them a pasty and Greggs. so that we could have an extra 50 quid on horse or something. You know, they'd sort of turn a blind eye to it.
One of the major bookies, Ian, they had a policy that they would only put the safety screens up after there'd been an incident in the bookmakers.
Yeah.
You know, so when they went single staff in to cut costs, you know, you'd have a woman behind the counter and she wouldn't even have a screen up. You know, it was almost, the story I heard was, you know, something bad had to happen for him to justify to putting that up. That's completely wrong. When you look at the money that they were taking out of them, you know,
it's just... Oh, that's right, yeah. Yeah, no, dead right. And then you went on from there into electronic roulette machines in casinos, which I've never played, but I imagine are probably just as bad.
Yeah, well, they were kind of, I guess the difference is with casinos, they were a bit more, you know, bookies are on the high street. You know, you nip and get a pint of milk. And if you've got a little bit of a habit, it's easy to go next door to the bookies and suddenly spunk away your week's family money. Casinos, it was more of a destination. You had to physically make a point of going there. So that was, in my mind, slightly different. The machines were almost identical, you know, and they were just basically, you can only get X amount of roulette tables in, but you can have lots of those machines in, and I won't lie, you know, I did well out of it. But it was interesting because even the people in the casino industry, they didn't quite understand, you know, randomness and stuff like that. I'll tell you, there's a story, if you like. We had one machine and it came up, green zero came up four times in a row. And I got a call on a Saturday night from the person at the casino saying, you've got to turn this machine off, you've got to sort it out. Punters are going mad, it's not working. And I was like, it's random. Random green. It's a bit like these people who think, because red's come up nine times, black's going to come up. It's got nothing to do with it, has it? As you know, it's...
I've got to ask you one thing about them, because, I mean, I've been... As I've said, if I go in a casino, I don't like slot machines, so I don't mind a spin at roulette. And I go to Vegas quite a bit, as I've said. And I must have said 100 times as I've walked past them, I stay in Aria, and as you come out the elevators at Aria, they've got a bank of these video roulette machines, and they're always full. Eight seats or whatever it is, always eight people sat there. But 20 yards away, you've got 10 real roulette tables. Why do people play the machines instead of the real game?
I think there's an element of, some people don't like the social interaction. I would rather play the real game, because you can have, you know, when you go to Vegas, you know, you sit around the table, as you've said in a few pods, you can have a good crack, can't you?
Around chatting a bit, that's what I like. Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Some people don't like that. You know, there's a well-known saying in the betting industry, you know, win together, lose on your own. You know what I mean? And perhaps people want to play them machines because they don't want people to see how much money, you know, with the, you know, that used to be back in the day, used to be the tubs of coins in Vegas. Now, dupe card and stuff. Perhaps people just don't want to, you know, people to see how many $100 notes they're feeding in. I don't know. So it's an odd one.
So your first, you're never really a better, and your first foray, like our previous two guests, Paul and Gary, was getting into match betting, and you got into it through industry contacts, finding out about Betfair. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, you know, I wasn't really a better. You know, I might have put on a muggy acca on a Saturday afternoon, and, you know, just to sit and watch it with my mates down the pub, and, oh God, you know, we're desperately waiting for a goal for Shrewsbury to win, you know, 30 quid or whatever. So it was all just real tiny little stakes and stuff. And someone in the industry mentioned Betfair and this whole concept of being able to lay off bets. And I think I discovered the match betting by Googling it and arrived at a match betting site and kind of opened opened my eyes to the possibilities. And this was probably about 8-9 years ago, you know, so a good while ago. And tongue in cheek, I think I said to you, I was lucky that my family and friends also liked to bet, put it that way. people who do match betting will say no more.
Yeah. and was it from doing that that then, I mean, I never saw your blog, and I think you start your Twitter now, it says that you've stopped doing it. Was that how you got into your blog from there?
Yeah, you know, I had a betting affiliate site, which I used to run, which did all right. And my blog was just a means, in the first instance, was just a means of passing traffic onto my betting affiliate site, you know, and that worked well. The blog was, you know, highly read, and you know, it was just my thoughts and just a load of bollocks, basically. But I enjoyed doing it. But when the kids came along, I found that I was posting on the blog less and less. And I think blogging has become outdated. As you know, you used to write a blog. Whereas why sit there and type it out where you can verbalise it and do 10 content on the pod, you know.
I can't stand writing it all out. It used to drive me bananas. So you used to feel I had to do it, and I used to put it off every week, think I can't be bothered with that today. It used to drive me bananas.
And from the match betting, I then got into the casino offers, you know, and I didn't get into them right at the start, because in the golden age of the casino stuff, the bookies didn't have a wager requirement. They'd give you a 100 quid casino bonus, and you could turn it over perhaps once on blackjack and withdraw the money. It was mental, and I wasn't in on that, but I got in relatively soon after, when the wager requirements weren't that bad. And we used to spread the variance. I had a group of very kind of like-minded people who used to, basically on trust, I'd never met them in the flesh, and we used to kind of share out the variance for the casino bonuses and do every offer going. And it was crazy times, you know. And so I look back now and think, wow, if only I'd had more, you know, if I'd have hit that even harder. But I also, in the same breath, look at people now who do match betting, and when they're doing it for a casino offer for a fiver or 2 quid, you kind of go, you're better off spending your time learning something like football trading or horse racing trading or anything that's got longevity, you know, because the bookmakers, they're not going to keep giving free cash out when they're just being not getting the right types of customers, are they?
No, I mean, it's, as I say, I mean, everybody I speak to, you know, we've had three guests on the pod, all three of you have got into that world of it. And I do. I've wondered, it's gone on for so long. You know, my benchmark, as I've said numerous times, Chris Jones. And Chris, I know he's had to change what he does so often and change the way he works it. Because the bookies are, I mean, they're not stupid, are they? They're just not getting exactly that. Then it's not the idea of it leading to a punter who's going to come on and lose all his brains is not what's happening. They're people just milking these bonuses and moving on. Before we get into football, I'm going to jump down your sort of notes that you sent me and talk a bit about racing, because you are a Proform man. I've had a look at Proform software, but I've never really used it myself. I think I took one of their trials or whatever that they published. But you are a Proform man. You've been on two courses. Both the guys I know of, and Steve I've spoken to, you went to Matt Gibson's, which is In Play, you say, and Steve Howe is similar to Peter Webb trading pre-race. So what do you do with that now? What's your sort of look towards racing? Are you a punter, a trader, pre-race, In Play?
I use the Proform. Proform is a fantastic resource, but boy, is it quite complex. You know, it's like anything in life, you get out of it what you put in, you know, and there's lots of videos how to use it. And when I first used it, I kind of did what most men do, you know, didn't read the instruction manual and dived in and didn't really get my true worth out of it. But I've subsequently invested the time to kind of develop my own systems with it. And that element of it is straightforward punting. It's punting in the majority to Betfair SP. And, you know, one of the good things about Twitter, there's lots of bad things, but you can come across like-minded people who are you know, willing to share their systems, and perhaps we'll talk about, you know, the importance of building a bit of a social network. So I use ProForm for in the main to just do sort of outright, you know, straightforward betting. So, and then the two courses I went on, Steve Howe's course about 18 months ago, that was pre-race scalping. Great course, good bloke. I kind of couldn't quite get on with the scalping. You know, that's more a personal failing of myself rather than anything of the course. And then recently I went on Matt Gibson's course, which was the hunting for profit course, and I've started doing that with a fair amount of success just before the races kind of got called off. So I was kind of, you know, I was on a bit of a roll and building a bit of momentum up, and that kind of like sort of took the wind out of my sails a little bit. But two great courses.
And that's in play. That's actually watching the race and making
it. It is, and I tell you what, Ian, I was doubtful that it would work, and I tell you why, because I live quite near a race course, and I went to one of the boxes about 4 years ago and saw the in-play guys sat in a box, eight of them, you know, sat around their screens, you know, and they are getting the feed direct from the race course before it goes out to the box, up to the satellite, to your screens, you know. Yeah. So they've got, obviously they've got the advantage, and I was so doubtful that any in-play method could work because of the advantage that those guys have got. You know, they've got 3 seconds at least, I would have thought, sometimes more, sometimes less, but it does work, and in a way it takes advantage of the signals that they're putting into the market. Clearly, I'm not going to say any more than that.
No, that's fine. No, it just shows you, though, isn't it? That, I mean, what you say is exactly right. You can be negative about something, or you can be positive about something. Yeah. You know, and most people just go, oh, you can't beat it. You know, fast pictures. They're flying drones down the track now with iPhones and relaying it through TeamViewer. And I know a couple of guys who do that. You know, I've dealt with these people myself. But most people just go, you've got two ways of looking at it. Can't beat it. Oh, that's it. Sod it. Or you find a way to make it work for you. And
exactly. And that is making it. It's literally piggybacking off the actions that they take. You know, and as I say, early days, and it'd be ridiculous of me to say I've cracked it, but I like the method. Again, it's like anything in life or in betting, you get out of it what you put in, and there is a lot of resource and a lot of videos, and I've been using this time off when the kids have gone to bed to just watch the videos and watch them again and watch them again and watch them again, you know.
I love positiveness, you know. I love that. One of my massive fears is people just saying, oh, it can't be done, can't do that. I love the fact that you've actually gone about it and put some time in and turned it around. I mean, your initial experience with ProForm was exactly mine. I opened it up and just thought, oh, this is all too difficult for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not a manual reader. I like to learn by doing, as I've said. So I had a bit of a click around, and I just thought, I'm just going to get myself in trouble here.
What I will say about ProForm, there are also some really good YouTube videos. And you know, and I'm not a reading it on a manual. I've kind of got some of the way there through watching the videos. And the guy who runs it, Simon, bit like yourself, you know, if you're a member of his service, you ping him someone, and within 24 hours he'll always come back to you with an answer. You know, so again, can't fault it, you know. So all good.
Brilliant. And then you joined Ultimate, which I didn't know. I thought you'd only been an Ultimate member this season, but you remember a couple of years. And you didn't, by your own admission, you messed about in year one.
Yeah, I think I did a few of your systems, didn't kind of put in any of my own hard work, was a little bit, I think, you know, all those systems are going through a bit of a bad run, so let's perhaps, you know, press the ejector seat on a couple of them. Typical, all the things you've spoke about, you know, in your pod about people jumping on and jumping off and you're never going to succeed in anything. And it didn't really happen for me. But then I kind of thought, well, you know, have a word with yourself, Jeff, you know, and rejoined in the summer I made, sorry, going back to the end of last season, I met online Lee from Lee Cow Trading and asked him to do some bots for me, and he automated the placing of those types of bets. And that for me was a bit of a game changer for it, because instead of trying to get the bets on and be at my screen before the games, or place all the bets on a Friday morning and I never had enough kind of in my bank to absolutely make the most of it, Lee knocked together some bots for me that were pretty much a game changer for me in terms of that, in terms of being able to get the sheets off yourself, run my macros, set the bets up on Friday morning, forget about them till Monday night.
Yeah.
So that was the first bit. And then the second bit, I think you released a number of videos that showed various different systems. But more importantly, the thing I took from it was how to look for systems. And I must have spent a week in the summer, no word of a lie, just doing that.
Brilliant.
It was boring. I just nearly drove me bonkers, but I ended up with quite a few systems and, you know, bounced it across a few other members, you know, like-minded members who kind of, some, you know, that's rubbish, Jeff, you're backfitting. Oh, yeah, you're right. Different set of eyes on it, binned it, and ended up with quite a few systems for quite a few leagues that, with the power of the automation, I think I was this season at one point, I was up about 110 points. I was absolutely chuffed. Yeah. Couldn't be more chuffed with it. And it a really bad period, I think December the 13th, strange enough, till all through January, shocking results, but stuck with it because of what you'd, you know, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, because of what you'd said about, you know, you get bad times, and it's the bad times that in any walk of life that define you, innit? Rather than
I've tried to make two or three videos this time, just showing those periods where things stand still. You know, that's the bit I try and get people to take out of it. Forget the winning side. Exactly that. If you can't ride that period for 3 months where it doesn't do anything, or it loses 20 points or 30 points or even 40 points, if you can't ride that, because it's going to happen, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. Like with the racing, you'll have a bad day. You know, there'll be a time when you go on and you think, I've got this cracked and it's all going, and then you'll have a bad day or a bad 2 days or a bad 3 days. And most people then say, oh, I can't do this anymore. Fuck it, I'll walk away. And that's exactly right. And I remember in that period, you're having a bad period. That's where you posted. And it's the first time I'd actually seen it, I'll be honest. The win together, lose on your own. And you sounded pissed off in the tweet. I didn't respond to it. I think, what do you actually mean by that? How do you see that phrase when you're in a community?
Well, I think the first time I heard it was, you know, and the analogy I got was, no one ever walked into work on a Monday morning and said, oh, fuck me, I had £100 on the Grand National when it fell at the first. Nobody has ever said that, have they?
No, everyone, that's right.
Everyone walks in and says, oh, I had a tenner on the winner.
Yeah.
Right? And you always hear about these people who have, I backed that, you know, I backed a 33 to one shot and it came in, but they're not saying, but also during the week, I backed another 29 of them, so I'm only 2 points up, you know. And so it's human nature. We want to share the good stuff and not the bad stuff.
And not talk about losses, Yeah, I mean, that's why in October, I mean, I had a dreadful, when I went to Japan and I lost that 20 grand in a week, and I come back and posted it, and I posted it purely for other people just to see, hang on, because people have this sort of view, oh, you just win all the time. How do you do it? You don't really tell us. But I don't. I have some, you know, that was horrendous. It was, I couldn't do anything right.
And it's also, Ian, it becomes, psychologically, it becomes tough, you know, when you kind of sit there and you've done all of the systems on Friday, it's taken you an hour to put all the bets on, and then you kind of go on a Monday night, I've done, you know, a fair amount of work, and what's happened? I've just lost money. You kind of, it can be soul destroying, and that's why I think it's important to have the right banking in, you know, the bank management, the state management in place, and all those sorts of things. And even with all that, it's still gutting, You know, yeah. You just have to, you know, it's a bit like, you know, you've got to be like Tyson Fury. You've got to get up when Deontay Wilder's put you on the deck and you just got to blink and go, I can do this. It might be hard. I've got to drag myself off the deck and keep going. And, you know, and listen, I'm no expert and I haven't cracked it by any way. I'm an absolute rank beginner, I think. But if you've got the right structure and process in place, you're giving yourself half a chance.
Yeah, I think you've got a great attitude. Don't, as I say, I've only met you recently. I think you're genuinely, and I'm not blowing smoke up your way, I think you're a cracking guy. And I think you've got a great attitude. And my dealings with you, I've been nothing but impressed with how you've spoken, what how you approach it. I think it's brilliant. I think you're absolutely superb. So, yeah, I mean, we're looking now at automation side. You mentioned Lee. I've actually spoke to Lee. We were going to meet in May, but because of the lockdown, obviously, I don't think we'll be doing that. I was going to venture north. Oh, apologies. Where do you live?
I live in Uttoxeter, which is not in between kind of Stoke, Birmingham and Manchester, you know, equidistant between them all. And for you to call me a northerner, when I'm born and bred in South London, I was mortified.
I am sorry, sir. I thought he's a United supporter. He lives up there. I think he's a Northerner. Well, I realise you're a South London boy.
Obviously, if I'm a United fan, I'm come from London.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is true. We'll get on to United in a minute. But
I just want to go back to the automation side.
Because
you know, not only on the ultimate stuff, I do other types of football trading, kind of taking off, you know, your lead. I went to the trading day. And again, I have found the automation to be a massive boon to me for two reasons. One, because it takes the emotion out of the trade. You know, some of the stuff that you say, enter after 20 minutes, if there's a goal, green up, you know, yada, 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 all those types of trades that you might put on the pod. I can do those from automated, and it takes that, well, shall I stay in, there might be a goal, or oh, I'm not going to get involved in here, there's not enough shots. Mm. And it just basically takes all that emotion out of it. Yeah. And the other thing is, I think I said to you previously, I don't want my kids to grow up and their memory of their dad was he sat in his office nonstop looking at the monitors. You know, you can set them up. And all right, I might nip back in to see how they're doing to make sure there hasn't been a power failure or something catastrophic's gone wrong, but they're up and running, you know, and people underestimate how much they can post all these green screens they want, but how long have they sat there to do that, you know? And sometimes I think people spend a disproportionate amount of time and they get their work-life balance wrong. It's easy for me to say, but I think there's an element of people get a bit too obsessed and do anything you can to make this game's hard enough without making it harder for you, and do anything you can to make it easier.
I mean, I totally agree with you. My kids did grow up. Certainly my boy, my daughter's 6 years older, but my boy did grow up with me not ever really spending a Saturday or Sunday with him from August till May. It's a regret I've got. I look back and it is a regret. Yes, I won a ton of money doing it. So I justify it like that. And he had a great life and good setup. But you, like you say, you can't get that time back. How people sit there doing that time not winning, I find staggering. How they justify that to themselves, I do find it absolutely staggering. I find how people can sit there and go, I've done $2,000 this month, and they've missed all that. You know, your kids are the most precious thing in your life. It doesn't matter who you are. And you do look back. Like, they grow up so quick. That's what I'd say. You just don't. Yeah. I mean, my boy's, you know, he's 26 now. I'm looking at a picture of him now. When he was 5 or 6, he was a great little kid, and I can remember it. And it seems like yesterday. And now he's away from home, and you do miss him. So yeah, I totally agree with you. But the second factor is equally as important. I think. See, I never really worried the emotion of it, but certainly since I've started things like the trading group and dealing with people a lot more one-to-one basis, I talk to people a lot more about trading now. The decision making and the ums and ahs and all. I mean, I've got, you know, I'll mention him, Scott from Zed Tips. I do a bit with him, and I was talking to him, and he's sending me texts on a Saturday afternoon. What shall I do? It's been a red card, and I'm like, Scott, you should know what you're going to do before the game kicks off.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like red cards don't happen.
Mm.
You know, in your plan, you should know. I mean, I don't tend to factor much into red cards because the FDD stuff that we look at it, it doesn't tell us whether there's a red card or not.
Yeah, you know, and I think if you're making those decisions on the hoof, then you'll get some right and you'll feel good about it and you'll remember that one. But over time, you've just got to be, it's all about consistency.
Exactly.
You know, and if you, an automation gives you that consistency, it takes out that, there's a red card or, the centre forward's just gone off. Are they likely to score? As you say, the FDD sheets don't reflect any of that.
No.
Have a trading plan and apply it and stick to it. If the results have shown over the last X amount it works, then believe in it and do use any means you can to make that as easy as you can for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, we're as I was going to speak to Lee, and I'm having and have got some of my own automation, which I'm expanding and hopefully have ready for next season. And the half-time correct score lays on Ultimate, there'll be an option for everybody to have those automated. So you don't have to sit and check half-time scores. It's definitely the way to go. I mean, I was a bit of a dinosaur putting it off, but I quite enjoyed the manual side. But when you see what can be done, which was part of my thing, you know, people would say, this can be done. I don't be silly. How do you get the score? How do you know what minute it is? But like you say, I go back to the point you made, meeting people on social media. I'm a big moaner about social media, but you do meet some great guys. And if you cut through the shit, you do meet people like Lee, yourself, whatever, who are good lads and are only too willing to help.
Yeah, absolutely. There's about three or four people, I won't embarrass them by name, but they will know who they are, you feel a bit odd as a grown bloke to kind of refer to these people as your friends because you've never met them. It sounds a bit, you know, I'm a bit uncomfortable with it. And you always kind of like your mates outside it go, friends,
that's right.
Friend, betting friend, all that kind of in between and stuff. But they are, you know, if you find like-minded individuals who are in the same services as you, so you're not giving any secrets away. And I'm a believer in, you know, stuff like the football, unless it's a really obscure market, if you're playing in the match odd markets and the 2.5s and stuff like that, there's enough liquidity in there, and by you sharing it with someone, you're not going to kill that edge, are you? You know, the whole thing about an edge shed is an edge halved. Might be true if you're back in 5 furlong, you know, races at Lingfield on certain types of horses certain days, but in the main, you're not going to kill anything, I think. I don't know.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you totally.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Really interesting. Love talking to you about betting. Absolutely fantastic. But I'm going to move into a couple of other points of your life, football-wise. You're a United fan then?
Well, when I was 8, I decided to follow the team who were relegated from the old First Division. Come what may, I thought, whoever's relegated, I'll follow them. So no one could accuse me of being a glory hunter. And, you know, the rest is history.
And it was United, and you went to the FA Youth Cup games where the Clark 22 won.
I remember seeing that, you know, they beat Millwall away, and I wish I had the programme because we circled, they had a young kid playing number 7 who was box to box, absolutely was the standout player, and that was Nicky Butt. You know, he stood out. There was a guy called Ben Thornley, whose career was sadly ended by injury, who was better than Brian Giggs. But more importantly, you know, the thing that came out of that was people like Gary and Phil Neville were not average, that's doing them a disservice, but they got where they were through hard work, graft, you know, a good life story. You know, they practiced more than everyone else. David Beckham wasn't the most talented footballer, but he must have kicked that ball over that wall, through that tyre and that goal, till his feet bled. And it made him, he took that talent and took what he got and applied himself. And you kind of, that's a bit of a life lesson, I think, you know.
We actually had him at Spurs as a kid.
And
I knew, you know, Casey Keller and that, a few, Gus, and I remember Gus Poyet saying, He'd seen Beckham train as a kid and, you know, like training packed up, and he would stay out there for hours.
Yeah.
Just taking free kicks, which when you think you're not dribbling a ball, you know, you're just kicking it dead ball time again. Sounds incredibly dull. You know, when I used to sort of play football, you're out dribbling, pretending you were Maradona or whatever. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But just to stand taking dead ball kicks for hours on end. Yeah, and it was Gus Poyet told me that we were playing golf once.
Yeah, it's all very well having the talent, but, you know, you go to another United, but Ravel Morrison was easily one of the most talented United players in the last 10 years. He's a waster now, and he plays Sheffield United.
Did he end up at West Ham, Morrison?
West Ham, QPR, you know, all right. He's in with the wrong crowd and stuff like that. But a great example of, it's not enough to have the talent. You've got to apply yourself, you know, and I think it's easy to kind of criticise a lot of footballers, but a lot of them are, you know, just working class boys like you and I, and who've just kind of applied, got whatever talent they've got and worked exceedingly hard. So fair play to him. So.
And I've been critical of recent United policy. I have to say, he's starting to prove me wrong. But I was adamant that Ollie wasn't the man. I understand, you know, they tried, I don't think they gave Moyes, I thought they treated Moyes badly. I don't think they gave him long enough. Obviously they went to Van Gaal and that went pear shaped. I think they, a bit like Spurs have done, once they saw Mourinho was available, thought we want him in whatever. How do you see it panning out?
Well, I think the problem at United is higher up than the manager. You know, if you've got in Van Gaal and Mourinho, you've got two of the world's best managers. Different styles, but, you know, proven winners. And especially Mourinho is the proven winner. And when you get Mourinho in and you know he's not going to build a legacy, or that's the wrong word, but, you know, he's not going to build for the future. He's there to win stuff. And he did win stuff when he was there. When he then wants to buy a 30-year-old centre-half for 25 million, you have to back him because that's what he does. And when you've given him a contract in the off-season, and then 2 months later you don't back him in the transfer market, whether you're a football club or a normal business, what sort of forward thinking is that? It's embarrassing. You know, it's not joined up thinking. The problems, it's easy to slag Ed Woodward off. He's a commercial guy. The commercial side from United is brilliant. Everyone takes the piss of how many noodle partners they've got. But, you know, they are bringing in the money still when there's no fixtures on. So to answer your question, they'll stick with him. And the match-going fan base, ignore the Twitter mob, you know, and the people who run all these fan channels, the match-going Reds will stick by him, which they did with Mourinho. At matches, no one turned on the likes of Mourinho or Van Gaal. They'll stick with them to the bitter end. And is Ollie slightly out of his depth? Well, of course he is, because he's only ever managed at Mould and Cardiff. But chopping and changing, well, who would they get? You know, there's all the talk about your man Poch. You know, you call him a fraud all the time. You're right. What's he won?
Yeah,
he hasn't won any more than anyone else. So I don't understand what other managers you'd get. So for me, stick with him. We were on a great run at the time. And you know what? As an older United fan, us not winning some stuff for a while, in a sick way, it pleases me. So all the Johnny come latelys and all the glory hunters can fuck off, basically.
Cool. You know? I like that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Allegri was the one for me I thought would fit in there nicely. I mean, yeah. I don't get the Poch buzz, and so I don't think he'd do it at United. I really don't. Allegri was the one I thought just got something about him. I like the way he conducts himself, everything. But certainly, I mean, the brakes come at the wrong time for you, because absolutely. you guys were flying.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And playing much better football. I think who's the guy you signed in January? Flipping my
Fernandes.
Yeah. I mean, I was desperate for him to come to Spurs in last summer. I thought, we want to get that guy. I'd seen him at Sport in Lisbon.
Again, Ian, it shows they wanted him last season and they mucked about, and they wanted him. They always wanted him. So why, if you wanted him last summer and it didn't happen, the day the transfer window opened on January the 1st, buy him. get your business done. And they waited till the last minute, and there's another 5 weeks there. He could have been playing an X amount of games, and you don't know whether those X amount of games. I hate to bring them up. Our friends Liverpool, they get all their transfer business done and dusted, don't they? Straight away, they are. Yeah. What it's, you know, in the transfer market, they don't mess about. You know, they buy people, they bought them for next year, and you know.
And that's what Fergie did, didn't it? Fergie identified his targets and they got them.
Yeah.
You know, we've always fannied around on the last day at Spurs. It's sort of what Levy's known for. Mm. But yeah, it's certainly not the United way, like you say. Jeff, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you, Ian.
Brilliant. I can't thank you enough for coming on. Some great stuff there. Great stuff for people to take out from it.
And I can't leave without saying something about Liverpool. You know, about the back pass law. You know, the last time they won the league, the back pass law was still in play, and they haven't won it since. You know, and they've gone from being the invincibles to the denied, haven't they? In 2 months. And if there is, of course, it's an awful, awful situation. But if there is one crumb of comfort out of this, it's seeing how kind of desperate they are to finish the season. And it will just, I genuinely don't think, if they just cancel this season, I may never watch football again. Because for me, it can't be topped.
You're not going to get any arguments from me, mate. You know why.
If they are given the title, there'll be a little asterisk by it, won't it? It'll be tarnished.
Yeah. And
almost as good for me.
I do think it would almost be better, yeah, if they said we're just going to crown them winners, because they could ever have it. Then
yeah, because you'd be forever saying, but it weren't really a title, was
but
it?
You didn't win it, did you? You didn't really
you
win
didn't
it.
Didn't actually win it, you were given it.
Yeah, that's right. That would be just as good. All right, mate, have a lovely day, and I'll, the guys, as I say, I think there's lots to pick up from this, and I can't thank you enough. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff, thank you ever so much, Jeff.
Keep up the good work, Ian. Cheers,
mate. Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye.
So I hope, as I say, I hope you enjoyed that. I really did enjoy speaking to Jeff. As I say, sort of Gary and Paul, who I've done the first two with, I know a lot better, but really enjoyed that. So next up, next week, we're having a wife of a member, Kelly Kelly. We're going to talk about the name first. Kelly, Kev's wife. And then 2 weeks' time, Sam Cassidy. I still haven't formally agreed with him. I've just told him he's on. Sam, you're on in 2 weeks' time. And then I've got somebody else. I can't remember who is on after that I've arranged with. I know I've got Brian Brewis. We've got a Geordie on, so we'll need an interpreter for that. So plenty of guests coming up. My brother's birthday, though. Have I said it's my brother's birthday, though? I've got, I better get hold of him and I wish him happy birthday. Right, recipe of the day. This is one of my favourite things to eat. Absolutely love it. I went years ago to a restaurant in Vegas. I don't know whether we have them here. I've not looked. Should really. P.F. Chang's. It was at the front of what was Aladdin. It's now Planet Hollywood. P.F. Chang's. And they do a starter, which is chicken lettuce wraps. Absolutely lovely. I do it with turkey. So you need, these really are tasty, honestly, lovely. If you want to have them as a little starter, but I quite often do a load and have it as a main. So you need a bit of olive oil, a pound of, he uses chicken mince, but I use turkey mince. Couple of garlic cloves minced, an onion diced up small, some hoisin sauce, about half a jar of hoisin sauce, 2-3 tablespoons of soy sauce, tablespoon of rice wine vinegar, a good inch knob of ginger grated. You can add some hot sauce, sriracha hot sauce, if you want to heat them up a bit. Some can of water chestnuts, drained and rinsed, and then just chop them up. And a couple of spring onions, and then some salt and butter, flipping, dearie me, salt and pepper, and then some, where did I get that from? And then some lettuce, I normally use midget gem lettuce and just eat it off the leaf on there. So once you've got all that, heat the olive oil in a saucepan, just get it warm, and then add your mince and cook that through and brown. Make sure it really crumbles up, and then drain off all the excess fat. Really make sure you put it through a sieve, drain it off. Another dab of oil in the pan, put the mince back, and add, then stir in the garlic, the onion, the hoisin sauce, the soy sauce, the rice wine vinegar, the ginger and hot sauce if you're having it, and stir that until the onions have gone clear and translucent and cooked through. Then stir in the water chestnuts and cook those in, and then finally add the spring onions sliced chopped, and only do those for 1 or 2 minutes because you want a little bit of crunch in those still. And then after you've done that, it literally is, that's your mix. You put it in the centre of the table, put some midget gem leaves on everybody's plate, and you literally just take a spoon of the filling, a couple of spoonfuls, put it on the lettuce leaf and eat it almost like a taco. Just serve, wrap it round and eat it round. Really, really tasty. Simple to make, literally takes 10-15 minutes, and they are absolutely beautiful. Beautiful. So that is your recipe of the day. Stat of the day, interesting, getting some lot of sort of questions about the stats of the day. Stats of the day aren't necessarily things I'm saying to you to bet. In fact, nearly every time I've said look deeper, particularly if just giving raw odds brackets, and with the horses, or why do you only go back so far? I could go on for hours about this, really. I mean, I have a lot of databases, horses, football, everything. Some go back 5 years, some go back 10 years, some go back 2 years. And people seem to want a set number. How far should you go back? A lot of the trends I ride are short-term trends. You spot something happening and you jump on it and ride it because you know it's not going to last forever. And it seems to me like, I remember somebody saying, show me 1,000 bets. Why? Why 1,000? Why not 1,001? Why not 999? Why does it have to be 1,000? People just pluck these nip figures out of the air. No one, you know, it's like shots on target. I was talking to the guys last night. I said, shots on target. You know, you get something like, going to back over one half goals. I want to see 4 shots on target. Why? Why not 5 shots on target? Why not 3 shots on target? Why 4? And when you ask them, they can't answer. Well, it's got to be 4 in it. Why? Give me a reason. I'm a logic man. Give me a reason why. And it's exactly the same. I want to see 1,000 bets. Why? Why do you want to see 1,000? Why don't you want to see 976? Just pluck numbers out the air. And all I'm trying to get you to is, like that stat yesterday, look at data. That is a really low risk to follow. You're back in favourites. It's a really low risk thing to follow. Even if it lost a bit, you're not going to do your brains. But as you're doing it, you'll learn along the way as you're researching it. So a lot of what I'm doing with these stats of the day isn't go and bet that. I'm not saying to everybody, here, I've given you, you know, by the time we get out of this, what will I have given you? 60, 70 stats of the day? Go and bet everything. I'm giving you snippets that you can look at, particularly if you're a member of FTS with the racing and the football, or FDD, to look at things differently. It sort of makes me laugh. People want this, it comes back to the sort of mathematician. Prove it to me absolutely, factly, scientifically. Racing's not like that. Coronavirus being man-made, you can prove. But racing, the bookmaker sets a price. That's the price that their model makes it. It's not a definitive, that's it. We know if we toss a coin, it's 50%. We know if it, a roulette wheel, there's 37 numbers and only one come in. A football match, we don't know who's going to win. Everybody in the industry is trying to put a price on that and give, for example, Man City a percentage home to Tottenham. It's never going to be an exact percentage. It's never going to, no one's ever going to be able to say that was absolutely bang on. It's impossible. But people want to get it to that level. And but just numbers, people crack me up. Why not a 5-year database? Well, why? I might have a 2-year database with 10,000 races in it. I might have a 5-year one with 4,000 races in it because I'm looking at different things. So just interesting how people approach it. But you know, yeah, next time somebody says to you 4 shots on target, just say why. Ask them why. I'd love to know the exact reason. So stat of the day, I'm going back to racing again. Stat of the day is this time course specific. We're going to Lingfield. We're going to Lingfield on the all weather in non-handicaps. And talking of Lingfield, we will be doing that again this year if sport resumes. Those of you who've been to Lingfield the last couple of years, we will be doing it again. Good couple of days, that is. What Shaz was, get absolutely hammered. Scotty Harvey drinking beer in the morning. Art talking garbage. And me running the show, picking up big winners. But this is favourites. So we have got The BSP favourite. So obviously, if you're doing this, you can either set, if you've got a bet engine or something, bet engine to bet the BSP favourite, or you would go, you know, a few seconds before and see what is the favourite of the race. So Lingfield favourites in short races only, up to 1 mile, 2 furlongs. Non-handicaps. Favourites tend to win more in non-handicaps. So non-handicap races at Lingfield on the all-weather, up to 1 mile, 2 furlongs only. Back in the favourites, you'd have had 136 runners, 77 winners for a 56.6% strike rate, 34 points profit on the win with 77 winners. If you wanted to do the place, it's had 113 places out the 136 for an 83% strike rate for 12.55 points. So again, favourites at Lingfield tend to do very well in the non-handicaps up to 1 mile, 2 furlongs. Won't last forever, obviously, but again, it's low risk if you're back in favourites. You know, this again, what, let's just have a quick look there. Count up, that has had in the last 21 runners, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 14 winners out of 21, 16 winners out the last 24. So there you go. Can't, that's all I can do, just give you ways to look at things. Let's look at something else. Okay, that's it. Right, that's that bit done. Next, he says. It was the best tip. It was the greatest tip. Joke of the day actually made me laugh, this Andy. Andy Marnell sent me a little DM on Twitter yesterday. I understand that Newcastle is close to being purchased. It seems to have been going on for years, this. But rumours are that Newcastle United are being bought by Sheikh Anvak. He's promising to put the freshness back into the club. There'll be people trying to work that out. The Geordies probably won't even understand it. Sheikh Anvak. What? That was more Scouse, wasn't it? Flipping heck. I've got all the accents. I do all the best accents. So there you go. Yeah, rumours are that Newcastle United are being bought by Sheikh Anvak, who was promising to put the freshness back into the club. It did tickle me. Most of what people have sent me, I've groaned at. But that did make me chuckle, Andy. What else have we got? Book of the day. Book of the day. Good book, this is. This is a good book. This is my sort of book. It is basically, this is my sort of book. A lot of these self-help books, I mean, I like them. There's things like The Slight Edge, Atomic Habits. The books I've given you, I think they're great. But they all take a quite sort of, what's the word? I guess they try and sort of massage you through the process. And I look at working with Dave at the minute. Dave is such a nice guy, a very positive guy, and he always sees the positive in everything, and he always turns it round to a positive. Dave's been on a lot of courses and self-help stuff. I've never done anything. Everything I do, I teach myself or I read. So, you know, we might be doing some training with somebody now, and we'll say, can you do your homework? And Dave comes back, no, that's great, don't mind, you know, you had a go, this, that and the other, and I'm very much, well, just fucking do it, why haven't you done it? Fucking get on with it. There's absolutely no excuse not to do it, do it. Well, Dave's great, you had a go, perhaps have a go at this. There's both approaches, obviously, equally work. His is probably better than mine. Do you remember that episode of The Office when they were dancing? Both dances were equally good. But these books, they do, they tend to massage you through it. I'm a bit more Sergeant Major type. This book is Sergeant Major type. Unfuck Yourself by Gary John Bishop. Get out of your head and into your life. He's a straight-talking Glaswegian. I really enjoyed it. Great book. So Unfuck Yourself. Get out of your head and into your life. It's not your usual self-help book. It's more a Ian self-help book than a Dave self-help book. But both approaches are equally good. So that's well worth reading, that one. That's the way to do it. Got to tell these people, do it. Get it done. Right, so I've done the recipe. I've done the joke. I've done the stat. I've done the book. My work is done. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Jeff. I hope you enjoy the podcast in general. Things like the book of the day, if they're getting boring, tiresome, you don't want to hear any more because we've done so many, let me know. I am open to all ideas. Stay safe, stay indoors, keep it going. We does look the, you know, you look positive so that the The numbers do look like they're plateauing. Of course, they're tragic, but rather than living in this world where we're trying to trip the government up and moan about everything and what's this, it does look like it's plateauing. Let's just let them get on with it. Let the scientists get on with it, and we will get through this. We've got FTS Fitness on the site. We've got FTS Connect. You can talk to me. Do whatever you like. I've got something big planned for May for you, which will be great to get you through the 30 days of May. Even if we get football back, it's going to be great. It's going to be the best. Oh, I forgot. I nearly forgot again. For 2 days running, I'd have been absolutely crucified. Masters quiz, didn't we? We ran the Masters quiz. 35 questions. They were very simple. I got 35 out of 35. But I can't win my own thing, can I? So we have the winners. 30 people managed to complete all 7 days, 5 questions a day. The lowest score out of 35 questions was 4. Chris Wilkinson, fair go, son. 4 out of 35, fair play for turning up every day. Zed Tips, 8 out of 35, good of you to turn up. Jeff Butler, another one, single figures, 9. Suggsy couldn't even manage 7 days. I texted him. I couldn't find his last day score. I said, Suggsy, where's your last day score? The man who lords the Masters like it's some sort of idyllic thing when it's a fucking invitational club championship. He can't even enter 7 days on the spin. Oh, I forgot. But Kevin Kelly was a notable 16. Gary Smith, a notable 18. But the winner with a fantastic score of 26 out of 35 was Matty Wyatt. 26 is fantastic, Matty. Well done. Andy Richmond got 23 out of 35 to come second. And David Scobie got 22 out of 35 to come third. If you three could email me into ian@ftsincome.co.uk your addresses, we'll get a copy of the books to you, and I will give you a little £25 credit each to an FTS service as well. So Maddie Wyatt, fantastic, 26 out of 35, really good going. Andy Richmond, 23. David Scobie, 22. Chris Wilkinson, yes, you were holding everybody up, son. The strongest golfer in the troop, 4 out of 35. I think guessing at multiple choice, I could do better. Honestly, I'm not sure how you do that. And the other thing I've got to mention, poker. We had the poker last week. Really good fun. Poker is set up again for this week. You need to go to PokerStars, the club. I'll put all the details on Twitter and read it out again tomorrow. But poker tournament on Friday. If you played last week, just go into the club lobby and register. £11 is all it will cost you. And we are getting Sam out and Art out very early this week so that we can just all enjoy it. Right, enjoy yourselves. Have a lovely Wednesday, and I'll be back with you all tomorrow.